Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Tom Dormer, our guest every Thursday, is back with us to talk about community service versus prison, how role models make a difference for others in the community and in the penal system, the wealthy, putting their monies to good use in preventing violence and mass incarcerations. Tom is ready to talk reality, take questions, get feedback, share experiences, and any other thing you want to talk about. So let's welcome Thomas Dormer once again. Tom, are you on with us?
I am, Leona. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you today?
I'm doing okay.
Great. So what do we have on today?
I mean, I had a little spiel about, when men and women get out of prison, alternatives and alternatives before going to prison. But, doing the show, I just don't think that we can't mention Jacob Blake, and which is, inspired in Wisconsin, especially me growing up close to that city where that happened. I grew up about an hour away from there. I was incarcerated in a minimum prison for 2 years in that city in Kenosha, within 2-3 minutes of that shooting that just took place. And it's, there's a lot to talk about there. And the police in Wisconsin, I really do unfortunately think this past couple days with Jacob Blake and what's been going on and the video surfacing, that's really the true colors of the police departments in Wisconsin, and most of them. Now, I can't look at every single human being and say that they're like that, but that really is what's going on. And in 2019, Wisconsin and Milwaukee was voted as a top segregated state and city in the whole United States. So there's a lot of racial tensions going on there. I still remember when I was in Kenosha. We have talked about this on the show. It's the same city that just shot Jacob Blake. They, in prison, they threw me in segregation because I was doing good in prison. And that is it. That is the only reason they threw me in segregation, is because I was making too much money, they said, and I was doing too good. So I think those are some topics that, unfortunately, we had a show planned, and we'll still talk about those things. But I just don't think that we can have this show and not mention Jacob Blake and some things that inspired in Wisconsin over the past few days, with the NBA not playing their games because of Jacob Blake, and not just because of Jacob Blake, but because of everything. So George Floyd, there's been 20 police shootings, fatality police shootings by unarmed black men since George Floyd. I mean, LeBron James and all these athletes and all these actresses and music artists, thankfully, they're using their close to billion followers to say enough is enough.
I'm glad you brought this up because, Tom, I never even thought about that. You are originally from Wisconsin, and I never even thought about this. There's been so many, as you said, shootings all over the country that I'm losing track of which states are it's happening in, because it's almost in a lot of states now. So I'm glad you brought it up. So please do talk more about it.
Number one, they had, Al Sharpton on World News and things like that. People have to understand, it's sickening to hear white people say that, Jacob Blake shouldn't have been resisting or whatever. So what is people saying about police officers? What's the law? Because I thought, I thought in the Constitution and as human beings, as rights, it doesn't say police officers have more rights than us and they're better human beings and they're treated differently than us. I thought that in the law is that we're just as protected as them. We have just as many rights as them. And resisting a police officer doesn't mean you deserve to die. That doesn't mean you deserve to die. He was walking away, which the use of deadly force, everybody's Googled it by now because we've seen it so many times. The use of deadly force is the last necessity, the last very last necessity. And I was a firefighter for 3 years. I was not a police officer, so I've never walked in their shoes, but I understand what they mean by death. You know, when you're a firefighter, it's a little different. They talk to you about, you know, when to pull out of the fire, you know, just if there's somebody in the fire and you still have to leave, unfortunately, because your life, it's either you both die or one person dies. So, growing up at a young age, I was taught, you know, what is exactly life or death? You have to be able to recognize that. And they're paid to do that. You know, us as normal citizens that aren't police officers, we aren't paid to do that. These guys are paid. These men and women are paid. They're employed by the government. They have pensions, and they're trained. They're trained to know what last resort means. And to pull a trigger with a man's back to you in front of three young kids as a last resort is it almost made me throw up. And, you know, I understand you said that you're losing track of it, but it doesn't get any easier for me. You would think that being incarcerated, and I've actually witnessed in my eyes a white correctional officer calling a black man the N-word and throwing him in segregation, you know, and he had state clothes. He had nothing, you know, just a black man in America, just getting mistreated because of the color of his skin. And you would think by now people would be used to it or anything, but I'm not, and we should never get used to it. I was sick to my stomach when I seen that, but I knew eventually Wisconsin was going to be on the national radar, and I can never say I'm glad, but I knew eventually they were going to kill an unarmed black man. They've killed many unarmed black men that haven't been recorded, number one. And number two, they've thrown many unarmed black men in cages for crimes that they did not commit, for allegations that were not true. So I'm glad that I get to speak about Wisconsin a little bit because I'm so familiar with it. But at the same time, people have to realize that it is not okay not to just be racist anymore. You have to be anti-racist. And if you're a human being that watches that, and if you can't put yourself in their shoes and Jacob Blake's family's shoes and any empathy in your heart to say, listen, that man did not deserve to get shot one time in his back, let alone seven times, let alone be paralyzed, let alone go through that traumatic experience with everybody around him, that affects the community. That we're not just talking about Jacob Blake. We're talking about every single black human being in America. We're talking about every single human being that lives in poverty, every single human being that has a criminal record. Like, this is affecting a lot of hundreds and hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people across the United States. And I think millions, easy millions. And I don't see there being a different side of the party. Like, I don't see the argument. I don't see the argument how somebody could say a white officer, and I believe that officer was in his 20s, could shoot that man seven times and drag him out of his car and just go about his day. Yes, you can cut in.
I just wanted to say, when you mentioned 20 years old, what I think about the bullies in the school system and the adults that say this cannot be tolerated, and yet these police officers, and I'm sure a lot of these young people don't go into the law enforcement to do those things. But when they see their peers who have been in there a long time doing it, I have a nephew that's a police officer on Cape Cod, and I'm very disappointed in him because he actually, from my understanding, he actually witnessed police brutality and mm-hmm. he defends the law enforcement. And I feel like when we can talk about the bullying that goes on in the school system, and we can say we do not tolerate it, but yet we have law enforcement and prison guards and officials who are actually doing it. They're bullying. They're gangs. It's almost like a unified title gangs in the prisons and in the communities, and they're getting away with it. People do not look at them as gang members, but I look at them as gang members because they get in gangs and they do these things. It's bullying because they know they can get away with it. Unfortunately, their bullying is mostly focused on people of color. And that's the sad situation. But that's all it is. It's gangs. I don't have any respect for any law enforcement. I don't care if it was a relative or if it's a stranger. I have no respect for any law enforcement that can either witness it and not say anything about it or actually be involved in it.
I 100% agree, you know, and I just think it's norms. I'm getting a degree in communications, and I've always been in the limelight due to my story. I really do by now. You know, as I walked my story of prison, I didn't realize how important, you know, that the story that I was, you know, creating and what I was doing. You know, you're just living your daily life. But now that I've been out years, I've reflected upon it. I've left my mark in prison, and I've really done something inside bars that I really don't believe there's many human beings that can sit beside me and say they've done the same thing of being my skin color. I compare, you know, me versus people like me. So, and it's sickening to see, you know, this continue, but I believe it's because of the norms. Like, you know, when I'm going for communications, people think, you know, are you a good communicator or are you not? And everybody, you know, usually thinks they're a good communicator, but when people go to school for 4, 5, 6 years for a degree and to study something, they have a little bit more knowledge. That just is what it is. That you have to respect that. If me and you are talking about, you know, history and legislation and everything right now, yeah, do we know it? But if a history professor came on here and a person in legislation, we have to kind of respect their resume, you know, that we do. So I believe when I'm learning about communication, and it talks a lot about, you know, racist and things that people don't like the comment saying, hey, you drive good for an Asian guy. You know, people are actually, some people think that's a compliment when it's racist. So, you know, learning about communication and norms, I do believe that our history, police have been getting away with this for so long. And then just in the 2000s, the cell phones have come alive, where the norms are now starting to change. Yes, we just seen Jacob Blake, and I'm talking about in the future. I don't believe in 2040 we're gonna be going on Instagram and seeing once a week nationwide police, you know, shooting to an unarmed black man. Now that is my goal. That is something I dream about. That is something I think will happen. I'm nobody that powerful to make that statement, but that's what I think will happen throughout all this. But I think it's a long uphill battle. But as of right now, you really do have to get to the root of the problem. You have to see both sides. I've always been a human being to look at both sides. Even when I went to prison, even when I did an armed robbery, I looked at it as if I was a member in the community and somebody did this. I looked at it as, what if I was the victim? What if I was the one getting robbed? I looked at it as, what if I was the victim's family member? I looked at it as every single party but my own, to see, you know, what, you know, to see all the angles of everybody affected by it. And I just believe, as a police officer, you have to put yourself in police officer's shoes. And what other career can you go to beside a police officer and a correction officer where you can sexually assault people, which we've seen that in Milwaukee just a few years ago. There was two officers that didn't even get charged, and they were actually doing cavity searches on the streets of Milwaukee to black men, young black men. They were going up to them in broad daylight and sticking their hands in their pants with gloves and sticking their fingers up their anal and doing cavity searches, saying, I think you have drugs on you. You know, you can Google this. These are facts. And these police officers didn't get charged because all they had to say is, oh, I suspected them. The police officers, when you're 20 years old and you're a police officer and you're able to, like you said, when they're young, they don't have the intentions. Most of them don't. And when you're able to be a police officer, when they usually start off, like I said about correction officer, they usually use manners, they're usually nice. But what happens when they're doing a police officer job for a year, and one morning they just wake up on the wrong side of the bed, and they're just having a horrible personal life? And we already know, out of all professions in America, police officers are top 5 for divorce rates. easy. They were number two last year. I don't know if they fell. I just like to say top five. But they were number two in America last year for divorce rates. So we already know that profession, over 50% of police officers will get divorced if they stay police officers. So every police officer we see, every other one, for sure is going to get a divorce. And when you get a divorce, that just tells you everything about the career. It tells you that it's a lot of stress and that there's a lot of complications. So imagine this police officer getting up when he's 20, 21, and having a bad day and pulling somebody over. Last year, if you would have pulled somebody over on a speeding ticket, hey, excuse me, do you know why I stopped you? He would talk to a human being with respect, because it says to protect and serve. You are supposed to protect and serve the community that you are in. And imagine him waking up one day and just talking to the person rude. We've always, every single human being has had a negative police encounter where the police was just rude and they were just mean. Imagine doing that for 10 years and having no repercussions. Sociology does report on police officers' mental status, and it shows that they get, as a human being, they have so much power and it goes so much to their head for so long. Just like a correctional officer, they can just throw somebody in a cage. They can write somebody a ticket. They can do anything they want. And 99 out of 100 times, they do not have a boss where they're scared of. Where most jobs, most careers in America, if you go to work and you are rude to your coworkers and you have a negative attitude and you are treating everybody around you in your career with a negative attitude, you would lose your job. Police officers, you don't, because you're by yourself, you're in the car 24/7, and it is always your word for somebody else's word, and that is why they pick on the lower class and the black young men, because they know when they see a young black man, they know they do not have, 99 out of 100 times, they do not have the resources, or on paper, if the police officer ever has to fight against this guy, he knows his word is going to trump, because all he has to say is, I've never broken the law, and I'm a law enforcement person. And then this man, oh, he got in trouble when he was 17 years old. He lives in the hood. He does this. Everybody in America knows in the court system whose word is going to win there. So I just think over time, the norms of being a police officer, and especially in Wisconsin, these white police officers, Wisconsin just got voted as the most segregated state in America. So how many white police officers have ever even had a black friend, have ever had a black friend in their entire life? But yet
you know,
again,
that's something I want to bring up too real quickly, because it happened in a situation that I know of. A family is very racist. A girl gets involved with a young man who has everything going in his life, but she's retaliating against her family. So she goes out with this black person because she knows that's going to be the one thing that's going to upset them. Later down the line, she's cheating. She's doing all these things because she's not really in love with this black man, but she's just doing out of retaliation. It goes to trial when that person ends up stumbling and shoots someone. So it goes to trial. Now the family is questioned about their racism. But instead of trying to admit that they are racist, and this is, you know, this was a part of the problem, they have their connections, some law enforcement, even the prosecutor, friends with the family. So what happens is they end up bringing in a couple of their black friends, or they at least have these people that they know, and all of a sudden they make it seem like they're best friends, just to show that there's some color in that whole circle. This is what happens with state police, and this is what happens with other law enforcement when they are trying to bring down a black person and they don't want anybody to know that they're racist. So the very people in that law enforcement or circle, or that even in the prisons, they will get one or two black people you'll see. Just like right now with the president running for the presidency, and everyone was talking about racism. But now you're going to see, because the campaign is coming up, the votes are going to be coming in, you're going to see them finding some black people who are going to be either paid off or going to do it because of their own selfishness, wanting to be famous and be before the cameras. You're going to see it. You're going to see more and more of other races popping up because of that. And we have another caller on the line, and I'm going to bring him on. You want to give your name, please?
Yeah, this is Chanupa, South Dakota.
Chanupa from South Dakota, and we have Tom Dormer on with us today. Tom, have you listened to Chanupa? He is from South Dakota, and he's been a guest on the show talking about the same, pretty much the same thing you're talking about. So we have an hour and a half show. We have another, we have 38 minutes. I thought this was an hour and a half show.
Just so you know, Leona, I only can stay until 10. I have a job. I was going to update you. I just recently got a job. It's an unpaid job, but it's at my school, and it's kind of history in the making. I'm the first ever person to ever be previously incarcerated and be in this position for my school with such high powers. So I just recently accepted it, and we have a meeting at 10. So I was going to butt out at 9:50, 9:55, just to let you know. But I would love to listen to this man and hear exactly what he has to say for sure, so I can kind of, you know where this conversation is going to go.
Next week. Okay, Chanupa.
Yes.
What do you have for us today?
Well, let me put it in this context. You know, just about maybe 2 days ago, I had to get this young grandmother out of a situation where they incarcerated her. Her name is Stella Roulard. Grandmother. She was 77 years old because she spoke more of the intentions of what applied to her as an elder. And here's a town like Rapid City, South Dakota, incarcerated her because she expressed her public opinion that as an elder, they were protected under what they called the Older Americans Act, better known as the Older Citizens Act. So there's certain specific language. And here's the 77-year-old, you know, grandmother that the state incarcerated for no reason. And so when Strongheart got involved, and we got involved, we went there, I went before the magistrate, you know, the state magistrate court, and asked them what was the scenario of this. They said the grandmother mentioned an understanding that was verbally threatening. Well, I says, you know, look, let me explain something to you, Your Honor. Okay, I'm only going to say this one time, and you can do whatever you do, but you're going to release the grandmother. Or we're going to start filing complaints against everything in this state that's crimes against humanity. And I did learn something, too, on September 11th and 12th, Sister Leona. They're having a big human rights protest and march down in Lincoln, Nebraska. And if I can, after I get off the radio show, I can text you that information. And a friend of mine texted that to me and said, Chanupa, would you be honored to come down and stand with the African people? I said, man, I work with the black folk. They're my people too, man. I said, yes, I'd be honorable to step up and do something like that to help them. I said, no problem. I got you guys. So I
now,
do wish to.
Who's putting it on and when is it going to be? Where is it going to be?
It's going to be held in Lincoln, Nebraska on September 11th and 12th. It's a two-day event that they're going after, you know, the state and the town for these illegal incarcerations and the majority of all kinds of things. I can get you that information, but like I said, they texted me that yesterday when I was handling the grandmother's case, well, actually 2 days ago, and I got the grandmother released, and they had to drop all charges against her because she's an elder. That's a form of elder abuse and creating mental anguish and so forth on her part, being, you know, established under and protected under the Older Americans Act. And that's, you know, sometimes we have to stick our necks out to really enforce this because this imperialistic mindset, there's no telling what they're going to try to do when they come at us if Trump don't get back in. You know, that I could care less about the white evil, but this is the name of the game, man. The name of the game is to get rid of the people of color, and, man, they're aiming to do exactly that. I just learned that there was a brother that got shot 7 times in the back in a little area in Wisconsin
the past few days. Did you just get on, or did you hear Tom talking about that a little earlier? Because Tom...
No, I just got on.
Tom is originally from Wisconsin, and he was just talking about how racist that state has always been, but he's he was talking about the same thing you're talking about with the young man that got shot in the back. You'll be able to hear this show anyway, Chinupa. If you get a chance, listen to it later because
yes, Tom's most definitely talking, I will.
He's been talking a lot on exactly what you're talking about now. And as he said, unfortunately, he won't be able to be on the whole time. But if you can listen to what he's going to be finishing up on. Tom, if you can continue with where you left off.
Yeah, that's
no problem. Most definitely. I want to listen to him.
I'd love to have you two get connected.
Yeah, we will get connected. I got connected with the man last week that's doing the petition sod in Wisconsin. His daughter texted me. He's doing wonderful work. And even he called me. We talked for 45 minutes this past week about the minute he called me, because he served 20-some years outside of Wisconsin. He is just in Wisconsin trying to help out ex-incarcerated individuals, men and women. And the first thing he told me was, wow, this is going to be hard in this state. They are so far behind on helping people in prison. There's no program. There's nothing. I mean, we've Googled stuff, Leona, and we've come up with things, but I've been in that state. I can personally talk about it. When I got out of prison, my PO has never mentioned anything about any programs. I never could find any programs in there. There's a lot of suppression in that state, and coming from that, I was just basically saying, I know I talked about it already for a few minutes, but to give the man that's on right now just a little gist of it, I actually grew up, I lived in that state 18 years, and I actually grew up an hour away from that city where Jacob Blake was shot. And when I was incarcerated for 2 years, I was incarcerated for four total, over four, but for two of them, I was in a minimum security prison, and it was in Kenosha, the same city. It was within 3 minutes of where that man was shot recently. And I was just telling Leona that when I was in Kenosha, I actually was in a work release minimum prison. And when I got a job, I ended up succeeding in the job. They have, when you're in a minimum prison, they have contracts with companies in the community to make sure that they know people are in prison and they can work it around. Third shift jobs and things where, like, you don't see the regular workers, but you're still working. So it's a lot of cleaning jobs, slaughterhouse jobs, and things like that where they pay you like $7 an hour, but it's still something. So when I was working in Kenosha, I actually ended up getting three raises. I ended up getting three promotions in my job, and when we signed up for the job initially, the prison told us we couldn't get one promotion until we got out. So I fought the warden on the first two, and when they gave me the job, the third job where I was going to make more money than the COs, they actually threw me in segregation. They took me, the whole unit, in front of the whole prison. They handcuffed me. They took me to segregation. I went to the hole in segregation with 19 others. I was by myself, but 18 other people got caught the week before. They were all in a cell together, and they got caught having bottles of alcohol, bags of marijuana, and they all tested or blew a breathalyzer that they were under the influence. When we went to the parole hearing to hear about our consequences when we were in segregation, 18 out of 19, 18 people went in front of me before, the 18 people that got caught with drugs and alcohol and failed drug tests, they all went back to minimum, and the warden did not call on their ticket. When I went up for the when I went up in front of the ticket, they read my ticket, and she right away was like, well, I don't see there's an issue here, and then the warden called, and the warden spoke on my ticket. When the warden hung up, she looked at me and she said, I hope you know, that is the first time I've ever had a warden from your prison call within the last few years. And the warden said, we do not want him back at our prison. We think he has too much resources and power. We think his minimum status should be stripped. And she instantly looked at me and said, your minimum status is stripped. And she sent me back to segregation. So there's a lot of issues in that state. Last year in 2019, Wisconsin was voted as the most segregated state in America. Don't get me wrong, there's Detroit, Louisiana, there's southern states, there's other states, Chicago, that is very segregated. But Milwaukee, don't get it wrong, Milwaukee and Wisconsin are extremely segregated. So I was just talking to her about, unfortunately, I don't like to say all police officers, but what inspired in Kenosha is really a reflection of most police officers in Wisconsin. When you review the video, you see the guy that shot the police officer, the horrible human being that shot Jacob Blake in his back 7 times. He actually had his T-shirt from the time he was on the passenger side all the way to the driver's side, and we noticed 4 other police officers watching the other police officer that was in his 20s, by the way, so I can guarantee you he didn't have rank over the other 4 police officers, pull out a gun and put it to the back of this man, and not one single human being, when they are all trained, they're all government employees, they all have pensions, and they are all paid salary, that are trained to know what last resort is. Not one single human being that is trained to do that job said, this is not correct. Put your weapon away and tase him. And then now there's all these videos in Wisconsin about white people resisting and white people doing this, and you see just a night and day difference. So, like I said, it's a sad reflection, but and I don't wish this upon Jacob Blake, but the world needs to know, and the nation needs to know, and Wisconsin needs help. Wisconsin's very behind on helping the prison reform and dealing with people that are incarcerated, men and women, dealing with people that are color. You just have to look up the statistics of what black people do in Milwaukee, what type of jobs they get, how many are incarcerated compared to the white people, and it is such a night and difference. You can Google the population, where the black people are. There's only 2 cities in Wisconsin where black people are, and it's just – it's absurd. So I'm blessed out of everything that finally the nation is looking into it. But this is a very realistic reflection of what police officers are doing in the state of Wisconsin, especially 2 ex-felons. And the last thing I'll say before you chime in is I've told Leona this story, even me. Wisconsin is so far behind the prison reform. When I got out of prison, so I've served 2 years on probation in Wisconsin and 2 years and probation in California. And there's problems in both, don't get me wrong, but it is night and day difference. It is so, so drastically different on how they do probation out here compared to Wisconsin. It's insane. And when I was on probation in Wisconsin, I've had the police called on me 1 time since I've been out, and it was at a dog park. Because a man tried to hit my dog because I have 2 black pit bulls and he didn't want them at the dog park, even though I had a season pass. I've been going to the dog park way long before this guy was going. And the police officer pulled me over in Wisconsin and he looked at me. I was wearing a long sleeve T-shirt. I was in a nice car and I'm white, and he didn't even hesitate. He came right up to me. He said, sir, he said, how are you doing today, sir? Everything. And he said, well, this just sounds like a little dispute. I see your dogs. He went up to the car. My dogs were wagging their tails. They were trying to lick them. And he's like, your dogs are fine, man. You're fine. He's like, I just have to see if you have a warrant. Because, you know, in Wisconsin, if you have any police contact, they just have to see if you're a warrant. If you don't have a warrant, you're free to go. He looked right at me. I had a witness right into my passenger car, another white girl. And he said, if you don't have a warrant, sir, you're free to go. I hope you have a wonderful day. The minute he grabbed my license, he came back with 2 other squad cars 20 minutes later, surrounded me with 5 police officers because I was an ex-felon. It went from letting you go to, I didn't know you were in prison, Mr. Dormer. I looked at him and I said, what does that have to do with a dog park? I mean, I committed an armed robbery with a fake gun 6 years ago. I looked at him when I was 18 years old. I mean, what does that have to do with this incident right now? And he said, well, that changes the whole game. We're charging you with battery. And I'm calling your PO. He called my PO right on speakerphone and asked him if he should lock me up. And thankfully, my PO was like, no, make him come to my office right now. I'll talk to him before I make my decision. And I showed up to my PO's office with a bunch of my family and my lawyer on the phone and everything. So, you know, they didn't do anything. But it's just crazy. That is how Wisconsin is doing. That is how Wisconsin is living. And if people don't believe me, here's what I'm going to tell you to do. You should Google, has anybody made it famous? Does anybody know anybody that is universal recognized that's ever, ever spent 1 day incarcerated in Wisconsin's prison system that we know? Nobody. Nobody. Wisconsin's prison system has been around for 100 years. You're telling me out of 100 years of black men, Mexican, brown men, going to prison out of 100 years, you are telling me not one single one of them wanted to do something in their life where they would be universally recognized? Nope, that's not the case. We cannot Google a single soul that served time in Wisconsin's penal system that has ever had a blue check mark next to their name on social media, that has ever had any power into that city. And I want that to really sink in with people.
Jeez. Unbelievable.
We've never had one single rapper. We've never had one single actor. We've never had one single actress. We've never had one single professional athlete. We have never had one single anybody in the court system, legislator, lawyer, anything. We do not have any nonprofit organizations that are universally recognized. We do not have anything in Wisconsin from somebody that has actually served the time, the horrible experience of being in prison in general, let alone Wisconsin, a segregated, racist state. Never make it. That is not a coincidence. You cannot tell me that hundreds of thousands of people that have been released since 2000, even the last 20 years, you can't tell me that not one single person had enough dreams or aspirations to do anything with their life.
Going away from Wisconsin just for a second, what is that family, the couple, the celebrity you mentioned, celebrities, that bought their daughter's way into college?
Oh, she's in California, yeah. I can't remember the celebrity, but she bought her way into college on a sports team California. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I guess the last of them, she and her husband just got sentenced, but they make it seem like she got 2 months in jail, in a federal prison. 2 months, and they made it seem like she was going away for 10 years. And it just is so frustrating talking about the differences in sentencing, that something like this can happen. People that have money, celebrities, can go to prison for 1 or 2 months, and they make it seem like it's so outrageously wrong, when, as you and Janupa, there's so many good people, elderly people, young people, that are going to prison for years and years and years, and it's almost like they deserve it. But not everybody deserves it. Like you said, a lot of people getting unfairly sentenced to long, long sentences when they don't deserve to be, or wrongfully convicted when they don't deserve to be. That's the difference in sentencing. That's the frustrating part about it. And when these law enforcement officers do something that they're paid to do, all of a sudden they become heroes in the eyes of the media. Heroes to do something and get paid for something that you are doing because that's your job. And I'm sure they're making a lot of money on the side doing briberies and doing all these corrupt things that they normal people wouldn't be doing. So they're not only getting all this praise from the public and the media, but they're making money on the side doing crazy, corrupt things. And in the prisons, they're doing the same thing, feeding garbage to the prisoners while the money of the taxpayers are going into food that they're going in, they're eating, the good food.
Yes, I agree, especially in the minimum prisons where they are making people in Wisconsin right now pay $740 a month to split a cell. That cell is getting $1,480 every single month, and there's about 50 cells in that minimum prison of almost $1,500 revenue every single month. That's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars every year, and the way of living is still horrible in minimum prisons. So I've always wondered, we've talked about this many shows, I've always wondered what the state does with that money. I can't Google it, I can't find out anything, you know, because when you Google how much the state costs, you know, per prisoner, it's like $32,000 a year. Okay, but what about all the hundreds of thousands of dollars that each minimum prison is doing? Are they using that money? Because if they're using that money, then technically the state law, taxpayers aren't paying for people in prison. People in prison are paying for people in prison. So it's a very...
There's no oversight. There's no oversight. And I have never heard of any organization, any foundation at all, even in the White House, there's no oversight. people are getting away with so much because it's lacking oversight. In the prison system throughout the country, there's no oversight. So they can get away with anything, and nobody is even able to do anything about it.
I just, you know, like we said, we talked about in anything in life, it takes leaders. Unfortunately, you know, I'm 27, so, you know, it sounds like you guys are both, you know, a lot more experienced than me in life. And so I didn't write the rules in life. God did. But it sounds to me that any type of change and movement, it starts with the leaders, you know, even with marches and everything. We look back upon Martin Luther King. We look back upon all these historic black leaders. We look upon anything in sports. Like I said, my whole life revolves around sports, music, and things like that. We look at these certain people that made this movement. These movements didn't just happen. You know, it took certain people, and I keep saying this, not unfortunately, but fortunately, we need somebody that walked in prison before they had their millions of dollars. Now, it's completely different having your millions of dollars and becoming famous and then going to prison. It is. It's completely 100% different. So we need somebody that walked in prison, that spent their life in hell on earth, in negative atmosphere, in nothing but sadness, depression, no motivation, and just suppressed. In every type of way, we need a human being that actually walked that, not only just survived it, but thrived in it, made something of themselves, and to open up doors for others. And I'm just doing my part because
that's you and Chinupa, that because you both yes. served some time, and even how little it was maybe, but it was enough to let you both be strong activists for those people,
yes.
not only in color, but people that are being so misjudged and misrepresented and harmed and hurt while incarcerated and then coming out. Both of you have been there. So both of you have been able to share and talk about these experiences.
And I'm just hoping to one day get enough limelight and have people like Meek Mill and have people like LeBron James and have people that have a lot more stature than I do in life right now. Be willing to reach out and be willing to help, because changing prison, no matter what, even if you are LeBron James and even if you are a professor that has a doctorate about helping out people in prison, it's still different. You didn't do the time. You can still help out. You can still be part of the cause. That's 100% what we need people to do. But you need people that did the time. You need people to look at people in their eyes, and they can see the passion, and they can. I don't have to Google anything I'm talking about. You know, it's crazy. You know, I'm sure you have speakers on, and I'm sure you've had family members of people that have been incarcerated, and I'm sure you have activists that never have served time, where they have to do a lot of research. They have to go to school. They have to look up a lot of things. They have to Google statistics. They have to Google documentaries and things like. I don't. You can ask me any question about prison, and I don't have to think twice. I just have to remember. I just have to see if my memory is working that day, and that is it, because I lived it every single day, 24 hours a day for years and years at a time. I've experienced maximum prison. I've experienced medium prison. I've experienced minimum prison. I've experienced all the negatives, all the positives. I've experienced getting out of prison. I experienced getting sentenced. I've experienced the whole system from the very beginning to almost towards the end. I'm not at the end. I'm not off of probation yet, but I'm close, and I'm close to fighting to get off probation early. I'm close to fighting to become somebody where I can write an author, I can get my record expunged, and I can open up doors for other people. But I've experienced almost every single part about the system that we are talking about. And it's going to change, Leona. I know right now, even me, I have doubts. But it is so bad, and it is so crazy that nobody has really looked into it to change these things. I just don't see, when I have children and my children are in high school, I don't see the prison system being how it is. I just, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe there's a civil war and a race war, and the country gets set back 20 years recently. But I hope, I always believe in the good over the bad, you know, because when you're in prison, there's so much bad. It can get you, like I said, I contemplated suicide almost every day my first couple of years, every single day. It's hard to look at yourself in the mirror. You know, people talk about it all the time that they're sad, they're going through something, but there's nothing like waking up in prison at 5:30 in the morning every single day, and the first thing you do is look at yourself in the mirror saying, you know what, do I want to continue to live? Do I want to wake up? And I just think that the prison system, there's no way that they can continue to treat black and brown men and women from these communities like this. I guess I look at the hope. I look at hope, because in prison, hope saves everybody. You're around all the negative, and then all you do is have to think like, well, I'm going to get out one day. Well, I'm going to do this one day. Well, I'm going to do that. That's faith. That's what faith is, to believe in the unseen. You can't see. You can't wake up and they don't put a movie on of showing you get out. No, you have to believe in it. You have to dream about it. And I believe and I hope that black and brown people in America will not be killed and thrown in cages because of their skin color. Shannon Sharpe just said it. Police officers nowadays are, this is proven, this is a fact, you can't even debate about it. Police officers nowadays are more scared of black and brown skin than guns. They are more scared than a black or brown skin color of a man or woman dealing with any type of issue, whether it's domestic violence, whether it's stealing a candy bar at the store, whether it's any single thing. They are more scared of dealing with a black or brown skin than dealing with a white individual with a gun or weapon. Most police officers going, that's insane.
I have a quick question for you and Chanupa. Now, you were talking about all these athletes, and I saw it on the news, that are not going to be playing because of this thing that's been going on with the killings of these black men, especially the most recent. What do you think? I noticed there's a lot of white athletes that are standing by them and also not going to play. What do you think about these athletes, these white athletes that don't get involved? Does that say something for this country? Not only are they not getting involved, but there's a lot of whites, even though they're standing with the blacks, the people of color in these instances. What about those that are not? Does that show that they're not really, they don't really care that these people are being killed, executed daily? I just feel like, I used to think that all these athletes, I thought they were all close together. I thought they were like all brothers. And yet I see a lot of the division even amongst them in standing by this cause that we are talking about now.
Well, Leona, you have to, like I said, it's going to take time, number one, but you have to think. No matter what, it's harder for people to give their opinions and really stand up for a cause. Now, don't get me wrong. Now, I'm so passionate about this. I don't see how a white individual can, but like I said, everything in life, you have to look at it as two sides, and you have to try to understand their point of view to make any progress in anything in life. You have to understand and then move forward. White people in America don't know what that's like. This is so new for every single white human being. Think about it. Think about people in high school. Think about any white human being. They've never had to have this conversation, ever. They've never grown up in a household where when they were 10 years old, they have their mothers and fathers looking at them, telling them about police officers, telling them about police officers killing them, telling them about their lives on the line. They just didn't. The white privilege is a invisible knapsack on the back. For a white privilege, it is not just acknowledging, hey, we have white privilege, and that is it. The white privilege means they don't – it is so hard to see. And we have seen this with so many actors and actresses now admitting, like, it's crazy that it's taken me so many hard conversations to really realize that a black man, I'm going to use myself, at 27 years old, lived such a different upbringing. that is not an excuse by any measure, but this is new for white America. This is way old for black America and brown America. So this is so new for everybody, and there's two different sides. There's two different sides. We've seen that by now. So white America, it was hard. If you would have told white America in 2001, if you would have told all your white friends that, hey, black and brown people have it so much harder in America and so much this and so much this, it just wasn't a conversation that would have went anywhere. Like most white people at the time would have been like, that's untrue. You're saying just because they're black, their whole lives are different? No, that's not the case. But now the norms have changed. Now there's not even a discussion. Now there's every single week going on social media and seeing black men and brown men being just mistreated over and over and over again, from the West Coast to the East Coast, from the North to the South. It's not just one state. It's not just one side. It is just universally too much. It is just so bombarded of information of wow. And I think that everybody's in shock. And when somebody's in shock, it takes them a little time. And that's why I'm giving them hope. I think that the United States is in shock as a white culture, saying they feel a little bad, they feel a little guilty, they feel a little stupid, that they were like, how did we know? Because in America, you think, oh, America, the land of the free, you think everybody is treated equal, you think everybody's given an opportunity, you think of this as a white human being growing up, and then now you're thinking of how in 2020, how is slavery still existing? How is black men getting just thrown in cages on a daily basis for being black? How are they getting murdered? How are brown people of Hispanic descent being just treated as slaves and given these jobs and just mistreated because they came to America for an opportunity? It's hard to grasp, because we're living in such a modern day where when every kid goes to high school now, they go to history class. You know what they learn about in history? They learn about slavery. You know when they learn about slavery? 18-something, 17-something. So they don't think like, hey, 300 years later, like, there's no way slavery exists. They have black friends. They see black people in their school. They see black people in their community. They don't think like, hey, there's slavery going around. That was something they had to go through. But now we are realizing black and brown people are still going through slavery. Black and brown people are still being murdered on a daily basis. And I just think that is a hard concept to grasp as a person in a community that just is like, I cannot believe that a brown person or a black person in my community, on my block, their life is in such danger or so different than mine. And I think now the whole United States is in shock. The whole United States is having conversations that are uneasy, and I think good will come out of it. But as far as the white athletes, I just think they're in shock. You got to think, a white athlete that's a professional athlete, they have been babied. They've never been in the hood. They have been looked upon since they've been in eighth grade as, oh my God, this guy can play basketball. He's going to college. He might go to pro. Do you really think they've ever sat there and been like, you know what, my black brother, my brown brother, he's lived such a completely different life? No, but now they have to understand, and they have to be open. They have to be willing to learn.
I want to also bring up one. You mentioned, and this is something we've been talking a lot of because it's been happening so much, the black and brown. But one of the things is that when Chinupa's been on the show, he's talked about a race that we haven't been really focusing on as well, and that is the red and the beige. And the Wampanoag Indians in Massachusetts, they pretty much fit in with a lot of the others, because it's a small community on the Cape. But when you think about South Dakota, you think about Nebraska, you think about Iowa, Montana, Colorado, all those where the Indians are, and there's a lot going on there that Chinupa's been talking about. And just briefly, I want to ask Chinupa, what are his thoughts? Because he's been focused as well on the blacks and the browns, as you mentioned, also, Tom. But he's also mentioned some of the things that they have gone through in past topics. So We have about four minutes. So, Chinupa, can you briefly talk on that?
Yes, you know, one of the things that I will mention on behalf of this young man, because he just, you know, got released and he's on paper still. Don't ever forget that you are always and you will always remain a free individual. And I'm only using the white man's philosophical language to express and explain, you know, the details of this. See, many, many years ago, the great mystery gave us this way of living man free. But our consciousness today is not aware of it anymore because of how the civilized man and this, you know, modern, you know, man has incarcerated our thoughts, our brain, our spiritual, you know, existence. And so we allow them to dilute that from us as a free being. But we're all connected to something that is more powerful than he is and he will ever admit to. And that's our own spirituality, being connected to the earth, the birds, the bugs, the trees, ourselves included. And we have this understanding that you can never incarcerate a brain. You can never incarcerate a brain. Don't ever forget that, little brother. I feel your pain. I feel you. You want to cry when I hear you talking, because a lot of us face that same thing. When you look at North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, Nebraska, we're still at war with them because they're still trying to settle the West. And no matter what the scenario is in the situations that we Native people encounter, it's no experience and it's no, you know, other endeavor that my African brothers and sisters are still going through, because let's be real, white America wants us people of color gone. But it's going to never happen. We need to start really realizing and putting the blame on white America. If we're ever going to get ahead, that's the answer. No matter if you have the Louis Farrakhans and all these great people that claim to say they stand up on human rights, I disagree. Why do I disagree? Because yourself, young brother, at the age of 27, you're doing something heroic and creative and really in the sense where it's exposing this corrupted mindset of how America practices and perfects colonial policies and only protects the white race. The white race. Let's be real. I'll never, ever forget. My heart is still angry at them for them making my brother George Floyd, while he was, man, detained severely at their discretion, cry for his mother. That is an anger, and if the rest of the people on the listening audience don't get it, you're part of the problem. You're never going to be part of a solution if you don't blame them. And it's a real honorable understanding that Sister Leona has given us this opportunity to share our hearts' pain and feelings of how much we love ourselves and our people. And young brother, don't give in to them. Do not give in to it. What they did to your dog is wrong. But see, that's how the rich do it. The rich use all of our people, even the Native people, as law enforcement, are abusive to their own. But that's what America has done. They've been doing that since the White House was abandoned in 1786. That's when corporations took it over. That's why the slave masters started creating more of the corporate mindset to continue to put our people in slavery. And the indigenous people were the first slave people. And then now my African people, when they arrived, don't ever forget about the first 19 African people that first came into my country. Don't ever forget about them. Those are how it began.
I want to thank.
And I will it back to you, sister.
We have only a few seconds, but again, give the audience, both of you, give your contact information so you guys can also get together.
Yeah, my contact information, young man, you can reach me at area code 605-517-1547. And you also can reach me at the second number. It's area code 605-517-2621. Both numbers are to Chinupa, because I have one for backup when I deal with all this heinous stuff going on in my country. And you and I need to get together to start exposing this, you know, a lot more heavier, because we need to bring charges against America. Bottom line, all people of color need to do that. Thank you.
Tom, it'll be on the radio show, so you can listen to it and get the information from it. Give your information as well, Tom.
My email is t.dormer, D-O-R-M-E-R, 89 at yahoo.com. You can reach me there anytime.
Oh, I look forward to contacting you, brother. And thank you, Sister Leona.
Right,
you. I'll let you all get back. Ha-ho! Wopila Taki Chichapi. Ha-ho!
All right. Have a great day, Leona. I'll contact this brother. Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you both. And we are now signing off, everyone. Have a good day. Listen to the radio show. Thank you. Signing off now.